Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
It's 2018, and Christine Ang is thinking about one of the most controversial and brutal crimes, as well as one of the strangest trials, from her home country, the Philippines. And we're talking about the abduction and murder of the Chong sisters. Apparently, Christine's a bit of an armchair detective, and she begins checking out the social media profiles of various family members of the slain sisters. What she sees, it defies even her wildest imagining. There in the photographs taken recently are the sisters themselves. Older now, but immediately recognizable, smiling, surrounded by their extended family. And it opens up this question. Could it be that the victims of this horrifying and, you know, nationally gripping crime were not even dead at all?
Featuring Joe Sweeney from Thinking Sideways Podcast and filmmaker Vincent Calderney, this is The Shocking Details.
Hey there. Welcome to another episode of The Shocking Details. I'm Joe, joined as usual by
Vincent Calderney.
And this week, as you may have guessed from what Vincent was saying earlier, we're going to be talking about the Chong sisters from the Philippines. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, interesting, horrifying case, actually. But let's go back to the beginning. Jacqueline and Marijoy Chong, who were 23 and 21 years old, were the daughters of a well-to-do manager of a trucking company. His name was Dionisio Chong. His wife's name was Thelma Chong. And they lived a relatively privileged existence in Cebu City. On July 16th, 1997, they traveled to the Ayala Center Mall on the outskirts of Cebu City to do a little shopping. And after emerging from the mall around 10 p.m., they vanished. They never returned home.
Their parents filed a missing persons report, and a frantic search for the missing women commenced. But in just 48 hours, a horrifying discovery was made. The body of a young woman was found at the bottom of a ravine next to a waterfall outside of town. She appeared to have been beaten and brutally raped. Photos of the body were identified by the family as being that of Mary Joy.
Well, the search was still on for Jacqueline, of course, and of course for the perpetrators. And in what seemed like very little time, the police had seven men in custody. Francisco Juan Larinaga, who went by the name Paco, Jasmin Asmar, Rowan Adlawan, who went by the name Wesley, Alberto Cao, alias Alan Pahak, Ariel Balanasag, Davidson Ariel Rusia, who went by the street name Tisoy Tagalog, which apparently indicated his mestizo heritage. And I'm not that up on Philippine culture, to be honest with you. But
I had to kind of give myself a crash course.
Yeah. But James Anthony Oy, who went by Wang Wang, and James Andrew Oy, who went by the alias of MM.
Jolly pirate nicknames.
Yeah, they all had cool street names. They all had arrest records for mostly petty stuff, but one of the men really stood out. Paco was from a prominent mestizo family and held dual Spanish and Philippine citizenship. And he was even related to a former president of the Philippines. And if it was not for him and his family, I'm not sure there would even be a story here for us to tell. And that really cuts two different ways when you think about mm-hmm. it.
Yeah,
but exactly. We'll get more into that in a little bit here.
So Paco's at school. He was in culinary school, and he noticed that there are these plainclothes men, right? So they're armed, but they're not dressed in any kind of uniform, going around his school. And friends informed him that they were looking for him.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's kind of scary. Right? Paco dodged the men when he saw them at first, and he hid in a classroom, I believe, and desperately called his family. Talked to his sister, and he told her that he was being kidnapped. They were actually, quote unquote, federal agents there to expedite him to.
Oh, federal agents, were they?
Wow. That's what they said. And I mean, they did extradite him to Cebu City, but we'll get back to them in a second.
Mm-hmm. Well, Paco now has got about as solid an alibi as anybody could have for the day and the night of the crime. The day prior, Paco studied for his exams. That's the day prior to the crime. He'd studied for his exams at the culinary school that he attended. Later went out to the R&R bar and restaurant in Quezon City, and there were even photos of him taken there that night. The following morning, he appeared at school in Manila for class and later for exams until around 6:45 p.m. This was the night of the crime. He was seen the next morning in Manila at around 8 a.m. for another exam. And by the way, this is quite a long ways away from where the crime occurred.
About 560 miles or mm-hmm. 800-900 kilometers, depending.
And by the way, this is the Philippines, which, of course, is an archipelago of lots and lots of islands.
Right. Yeah. You actually could drive there, but it would take 20 hours with all the different ferries, according to Google. It was noted by investigators that Paco, though, what he could have done was catch a plane to Cebu City, committed the crime, and then caught another flight back to Quezon City in the morning. That would have been technically possible, but the airlines had no record of him boarding any flight of any kind in Manila or departing in Cebu City or a single witness that could place him anywhere near Cebu City, much less the Ayala Center Mall.
Mm, those niggling little details. Who cares about that?
Right?
I know. So that wasn't enough to stop the trial from moving forward, and it certainly didn't stop the media frenzy surrounding the trial and the crime. Paco actually had the chance to flee the country, but he did not because he was certain that he would be acquitted, and he wanted to clear his family name. He was certain he'd be acquitted, I guess, because he felt the case against him was so incredibly flimsy.
Yeah, he was really sure of his innocence. He didn't think he would even make it to trial, because his alibi was so solid.
Yeah.
In the media, Paco was demonized as this spoiled rich kid psycho. And this wasn't the case, really. Paco was a lot more privileged than most people in the Philippines, but his background wasn't really like all that super wealthy. And while he did have a criminal record, it was mostly some pretty petty stuff, a couple drunken fights, things like that. Mm-hmm. It would have been a pretty major step up for this guy, and actually for a lot of these guys, if he had actually committed these crimes, you know, what was done to the sisters, what is believed to have been done to the sisters, would not have been his normal MO.
But nonetheless, crime of the century, we got our guy, so that's that. Of the seven accused men, Paco was acquainted with just two of them. The other five he met in jail, at least that's what he says. The last one he only met for the first time at trial about 10 months after his arrest. That would be the star witness who turned out to be Davidson Ariel Rusia, who we mentioned earlier is one of the seven that was a suspect. Rusia would turn out to be the star witness for the prosecution because he had been promised full immunity in exchange for testifying against the other six.
So let's talk about this trial because it was a shambles.
Mm.
There's just no other way to put it. They don't do jury trials in the Philippines.
Mm.
So the men had only Judge Martin Ocampo to make their case to. They were tried en masse, except for Rusia, of course, who wasn't tried at all. And it seemed like the entirety of Cebu City was out for their blood. Pre-trial hearings were rocked by noisy observers and huge crowds outside the courthouse. Paco actually tried to have the trial moved to Quezon City, claiming he couldn't get a fair trial in Cebu. This was met with outrage from the local community and was actually tossed out by the judge.
Who, by the way, was seen during the trial more than once to fall asleep. he also tossed out the defendants several times and was openly hostile towards the defense lawyers, going so far as to jail one for objecting too frequently. The strangest moment of the trial came as the judge refused to hear some of the 35 witnesses who could place Paco in the Manila Quezon area at the time of the crime. Despite them previously having been agreed to by all sides, he basically excluded them because it was just, quote, too many witnesses, unquote. So, well, talk about your fair, impartial trial.
Not really. I mean, I think maybe part of what was on Judge Ocampo's mind is that none of it really mattered anyway because of the prosecution's star witness, Davidson Recia. Recia was actually ineligible under Philippine law to turn state's witness due to his participation in the crime, but he was somehow kind of bafflingly allowed to make the deal and testify anyway. And Recia, he made a big splash at trial.
Mm-hmm. They called him a star witness for a reason.
He was cool. He was charismatic. As he's describing these, you know, horrendous details of this abduction, this brutal gang rape by three of the men, including Paco, as well as the murders and the disposal of Marijoy in the ravine. Recia was called the matinee idol gangster in the press. He was a drug addict and a repeat violent offender. He'd been, he'd actually served a felony burglary sentence in Missouri. He'd lived in the States for a time. Yeah. But now he was seen as, you know, kind of the bad boy with a heart of gold. He was said to even have like a fan club of young women who would show up at the court.
Yeah. Well, when I was first reading through this, one of the things that really popped into my mind is how apparently satisfied everybody was with this recounting of this whole thing, and nobody bothered to ask him about the other body.
Yeah.
You know, which is a key thing. It's like, dude, I mean, what you're telling us, you could have gotten from the newspapers, dude. You know, I mean, let's hear about the other one.
You know, we have your confession. We're not giving you a deal unless you take us to Jacqueline's body. So a televised reconstruction of Recia's testimony about how the abduction went down was filmed. And when I say reconstruction, it was like cinematic. It had lighting and actors. And it was even broadcast on national TV before the accused could even take the stand. Thelma Chong was seen beaming in court. She was apparently really proud of Recia.
Even though he was one of the guys that took part in the heinous crime against her daughters. Yeah, that's weird. But she was seen beaming in court in the dramatic reenactment, or actually in the real trial itself, or both.
Not in the reenactment. She's not in the reenactment.
Yeah.
It in court, she was beaming at Recia. She said she was proud of him.
Wow.
She brought him clothes and cake on his birthday.
Oh man, that's so weird. Because I mean, I get that you're happy that this guy has turned on his cohort and everything and is ratting them out. But at the same time, you'd have to have kind of mixed feelings about the dude, wouldn't you think?
You would think. I don't know.
At best. Best, right? Yeah. I mean, I would still be hating his guts.
Yeah. And I think that's most of the time the case that you see when you read about these kind of things. So Recia also, he was a little strange after, you know, doing a good job testifying for the prosecution. He then tried to feign illness to avoid cross-examination and pretended to faint when he was presented with his past crimes by the defense, at first denying all of them when it was, I mean, it's kind
like
of
that. I gotta remember that if I'm ever like, you know, if I'm ever like put on the spot, I'll just pretend to faint.
Yeah, yeah. He was trying to get out of it.
Or maybe I'll play possum. Maybe I'll just pretend to die. I'll just, yeah, that's it.
Well, and for his fans, you know, they were buying this up. They were concerned that the trial was taking this toll on poor Recia.
Oh, poor guy.
Yeah. And nobody actually, you know, when you read about it, seems super concerned about the inconsistencies that were coming up in his testimony. Because remember, now he's being cross-examined and some of the details, even in court, aren't lining up.
Mm-hmm. Luckily, they had a judge on their side, didn't they?
They did. Judge Ocampo ended the testimony early.
Yeah, that was one of my first thoughts about this. Is as I mentioned earlier, it's like I saw some real openings there for the defense, and you know, asking this guy about the other sister and his fate. But apparently, they weren't given the opportunity to, you know, drag him over the coals on that particular issue. A real shame.
Yeah, I don't know how long they actually got to question him for, but it was cut off. So,
although again, you know, we're talking about this was not a trial by jury anyway. The judge seemed to have had his mind made up, but let's go back to Thelma, the mother of the two dead sisters. Thelma Chong became a rising star in certain circles. She was even appointed the vice president of an organization called the Crusade Against Violence. I don't know if they're still around or not. I didn't bother checking to see if they have a webpage. But Thelma's sister was the personal secretary to the newly elected president at that time, Joseph Estrada. who had, by the way, assigned four different federal agencies to tackle the investigation. They performed searches for Jacqueline's body on Paco's family's farm. Didn't find it. And the investigators told Paco's family that they had orders directly from the president. So, you know, Thelma was kind of connected. Thelma Chong. But nonetheless, despite all the federal searches, nothing was ever found. Thelma had claimed in the media that Paco had dated Marjoy and actually had turned stalker and menacer towards her. Actually, there was no evidence that he even knew Marjoy, that they had even met. Paco actually spent very little time in the area around Cebu City.
There was a huge problem in the case that got laid bare during the trial, and that's Marjoy herself. She had never been definitively identified as actually being Mary Joy.
Yeah, the family never actually saw the body, did they?
Well, they ID'd photos.
Yeah.
But no conclusive testing was ever done.
Which is weird.
That is very weird.
I mean, it's 1997. I mean, there's DNA, dental records, all kinds of stuff. They never did any of that, right?
Not that I know. And the coroner said that he was under pressure to move things along due to the high profile of the case. And they said he just didn't have time for more testing. But other accounts I've read say the family refused to release things like dental records or DNA samples. Mm. I don't think Marjorie had been fingerprinted in her life.
That's just such a strange stance for the coroner to take, to say, oh my God, this is such a high profile case. This is exactly the one where I want to, you know, cut some corners and just phone it in and not do my job. it's not a great argument, I don't think.
I think it's also really telling. I think he's saying that, you know, his supervisors, his bosses put him under pressure not to complete the testing.
Well, yeah, exactly. I think, yeah, they just said, hey, it's done. Close the file. You know, we're ready. Yeah, I think that's basically it. Yeah.
No, I don't really know the whole thing with the family. I don't have it 100% that the family wouldn't release any of the dental records or whatever. But I have also seen photos and videos from Mari Joy's discovery and autopsy. Mm-hmm. Which are disturbing. Yeah. You can find them, though. I'm anything but an expert, but when you compare that woman's dead body to the photos of Marjoy when she was alive, they look really different.
Mm-hmm.
Other people have pointed this out. Again, not an expert. I'm not the one to judge. Low-resolution videos and photos aren't going to be the best anyway. And a corpse goes through a lot, you know?
Oh, yeah. I don't know how long it was laying there before it was discovered. So there's that. You know.
Fortunately, none of this really mattered because the judge refused to even allow the defense to bring experts to testify to the fact that it might not even be Marjoy. He just wouldn't let him take the stand.
And I want to say, too, that the whole feelings of the family over the whole thing in the case like this would have been or should have been kind of irrelevant. I mean, they don't actually possess the dental records. The authorities, had they wanted to, could have actually subpoenaed, or the equivalent in Philippine law, the mm-hmm. dental records from her dentist. You know, they could have done that. I mean, and as far as DNA, they could have gotten themselves a warrant and busted into the family home and taken Mari Joy's toothbrush or something to get some DNA. They could have done that. And obviously, they weren't interested in doing it. I mean, you can't just say the family was, you know, responsible for this. Nobody seemed to really want to do the testing. Weird.
Yeah.
So many of the other five men were hanging their hopes on Paco because they were very poor and mostly of Chinese descent. Paco had the best legal team because his family could afford it. And he also had the most clearly established alibi. So his co-defendants were hoping that if the case against Paco fell apart, then they too would be spared a conviction.
Mm-hmm.
Good reasoning. Yeah. The families of these accused men stood by them doing media appearances, appearing in court when Judge Ocampo would allow them to. And over time, they began to push back increasingly effectively on this narrative of the men as violent thugs. And this actually had some effect among the public, but apparently not with Judge Ocampo, alas.
After the trial ended, Judge Ocampo took 3 entire months to render a verdict. All the while, the 6 men are still in jail. Ocampo sentenced the men to life in prison in a few short, curt paragraphs. By this point, however, things had changed. The population, at least some of them, was beginning to sympathize with the men and their families. The trial had not been the slam dunk case that I think people were expecting. Nonetheless, the men were transferred to prison on May 59.
So let's move forward somewhat quickly here. October 7th, about half a year later of 1999, Judge Ocampo checked into a hotel where he first attempted to slit his wrists. And then when that didn't work out, he took his own life with his pistol. So this may have been related to the trial, maybe not. He had been estranged from his wife and children and was struggling with the stress of being a judge, especially on this case, I bet. And all of this he detailed in a note that he left behind that was written in English.
Yeah, that's pretty weird. I don't know what to make of Judge Ocampo's suicide. I tried to fit that into the narrative in my mind, but it does say that it does seem that he does not reference the trial in any direct way in his suicide letter. I haven't read it. I haven't been able to find a copy online, but apparently it was other things that were driving him to this. There's also people who suspect that he was forced to write that.
Well, there's that. And it's also, if the police have not made it public, the note itself might actually have said something quite different from what they're telling us it says.
That's true.
I mean, who knows?
You can, there are like frame grabs of it. You can read part of it.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. But I don't think the whole thing. So around this time, it comes out that Davidson Rusia had been kept awake for days and tortured by officials before he gave up the other six men. If the confession was forced, it may answer one really important question. Why didn't Rusia know where Jacqueline Chong was?
And to be clear here, I was wondering, did he even offer up an excuse as to why he didn't know? Like, did he say, well, you know, I mean, I had to go home and get to bed because I had to be up early the next day, so I left before they raped and murdered her. Did he say something like that to them even?
I mean, so I can find.
Yeah.
I believe he, yeah, his official story is that he was not there when the other men disposed of the body. But I didn't actually have the exact thing that he said. I wasn't able to get the trial transcripts.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, what's important to take away is that he had no idea. Not even the beginning of a start of a way to point people in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Hey, so moving forward to the year 2004. The Supreme Court of the Philippines changed the men's sentences to the death penalty. This was likely due to the influence of the president, who was an ally of the Chong family.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Thelma's sister, that's Thelma Chong, happened to be on the Supreme Court. So, well, that couldn't have hurt either.
Yeah.
In 05, that's 2005, the men ran out of appeals. The death penalty was upheld by the last court. Finally, before all but the youngest of the accused, who was, it turns out, he had been a minor at the time of the crime. So this is not good news for our defendants.
It's looking bad, but yeah. they get some relief. In 2006, President Gloria Arroyo abolished the use of capital punishment. So the men's sentences were commuted back to life in prison. In 2009, the Spanish government managed to get Paco extradited to serve the remainder of his time in Spain, where he is still in prison. But he is allowed out on work release. Because he's in Spain, he is able to communicate with the media a little bit. And this is the main reason we know about this case outside the Philippines. The Spanish court has even offered to release him on time served if he admits his guilt. And to this day, he refuses.
In 2011, a documentary was made about Paco and the other men and was released. It was called Give Up Tomorrow. And it brought some international attention to their case, although I noticed the U.S. media hasn't really noticed it. But
not really.
Not at all. But and then in 2018, there was a film dramatization of the crimes called Jacqueline Comes Home. This was released and in the Philippines and met with quite a bit of controversy, I hear.
Yeah. Mm. It from what I can tell about the movie, I haven't seen it, but from what I can tell about the movie from watching trailers and some clips online, it very much works on the story as told by both Thelma and Rusia.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to giving any credit to the fact that some of these men look like they were not even in the right part of the country.
Even at that, though, apparently Thelma Chong was not a fan of the movie, was she?
She was not. She did not care for the film, and they asked for her blessing while making it, and she refused to give it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she gave one of her fairly rare, these days, newspaper interviews to condemn it. So that's kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So this brings up to the same year as these mysterious photos surfaced.
Yeah, the ones found on social media, correct?
Exactly.
Yeah.
They depict family gatherings held by the Chongs and their extended family living in Canada.
Mm.
Those photos clearly depict two women, the age of Mari Joy and Jacqueline, and the resemblance is uncanny. I mean, it really looks like them.
So it looks like possibly the sisters weren't murdered. They might have just moved to Canada.
I guess. Yeah, I think there are people who think that. Now, there's another explanation that may kind of put this to rest.
Mm.
See, Thelma and Dionisio had two sons.
As well as the two daughters?
As well as the two daughters.
Yeah.
The women in the photos may be their wives. And indeed, one photo the way they're arranged, the way they're standing, it looks more like two couples than four siblings.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of hard to say, but that is a reasonable explanation. Even some online sleuths have spoken to people familiar with the Chong family in Canada, and they've said allegedly over, Messenger and other apps like that, that it's kind of an open secret in the Filipino community that Mary Joy and Jacqueline live among them under assumed names.
Which is weird, because you'd think that somebody would go to the Canadian authorities and ask them to do a little investigating. Although maybe the Canadian authorities have got better things to do. I don't know. But
You got me. I don't know. I think the problem is no one in the Philippines really wants this looked into.
Apparently not, because there's one aspect to this that we haven't talked about yet, but I'll mention it now, which is something that came out after the trial. Dionisio Chong, remember that the father of the two murdered or not murdered women, who worked at a trucking company, remember that. He worked for a firm that was owned, it turns out, by a drug lord whose name was Mr. Lim, who apparently had deep political connections, which helped him to avoid prosecution for years while he operated his drug biz. Makes sense. But apparently, the vice was tightening around him. Maybe he was losing his influence, whatever. But just before Dionisio's daughter's disappearance, he had been scheduled to testify against Mr. Lim, the drug lord, at a congressional hearing in the Philippines. But then he suddenly changed his mind. It might have been that he was just busy with the missing and distracted with his missing children. But it could also be that perhaps the daughters were kidnapped as a way to put a little pressure on Dionisio and ensure his silence. That makes some sense to me. But Mr. Lim, the drug lord's involvement in this case goes a little deeper still. It was later discovered, much later, that the federal agents, remember those plainclothes armed guys that went to Paco's school to find him? Mm-hmm. Turns out they weren't federal agents at all. They were Mr. Lim's personal bodyguards. Now, that's a little strange. A little sketchy.
Let's talk about that one, yeah.
Yeah.
Davidson Rusia has since vanished, and his whereabouts are completely unknown. Jacqueline's body has never been located. The body that's buried in Mara Joy's grave has never been exhumed or tested. And I should add that all of the six men are still in prison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Including Paco.
Yeah, in Spain. Huh.
Right.
This is a really twisted little story, I gotta say. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's dive right into theories.
Yes, theories. But wait. What about a word from our sponsor?
This one's already running long. Let's not worry about contact E today.
Okay. All right. Let's do it.
Watch contact E. That's it.
Okay. There you go. That works. All right. Let's go for our theories here. We've got several. Theory one is a straight up theory that the seven perps are guilty. That's guilty. Guilty is sin. And a lot of people in the Philippines apparently believe this, that they are guilty.
There are definitely people who think this. The Chong family believes this. They're satisfied that justice was done for the most part.
But, one of the things that's I really still can't quite figure out is how it was that the police got onto Paco and his acquaintances, and maybe not acquaintances even. How did they get onto them as suspects?
That part, I don't know. We can talk about, there is a theory, we'll talk about it later, that sort of connects Paco and Lim, and that somehow it may have something to do with that. But we'll talk about that in a second.
Okay.
So the second theory is that the seven men were railroaded.
Okay.
So in this version of events, the intense public pressure led authorities to torture Rusia until he gave up some random guys who may have given up other guys. Or they fed him information. It doesn't really matter. Either way, this was all done so that they didn't look incompetent.
Yeah.
And that the trial was, the sham that it kind of appears to be. And frighteningly, the real killers are still out there.
Yeah, that is the problem. Is that, and this can happen, I think, that the police either through, not even necessarily always deliberately. It can be sometimes they light on a suspect and convince themselves that, these guys are the ones, when there's kind of like the confirmation bias going on and stuff. And the real tragedy is, besides the ruined lives of the people that they accuse, is that somebody else gets off scot-free, of course.
Right. Who may be the sort of person we would not like running around out there.
Probably not. And the heartbreaking thing is that the actual killer was actually found. he or they could not be tried because somebody's already been tried and convicted for this crime.
It's true.
So, I mean, you could try, you know, they've got an obvious defense there. Hey, you know, obviously there's better suspects. They're already in jail. So, but anyway, I think that they probably were railroaded. It kind of looks that way. But the question is why? That's where we get into the more intriguing theories here, right?
Yeah. This is where we're going to talk about the third theory, which is that Mr. Lim did it.
Mm, yes.
Dionisio Chung worked for that trucking company, and it was known to be corrupt and was used by the notorious drug kingpin, Mr. Lim, to move drugs and smuggled medication.
Mm-hmm.
Lim found himself in hot water after this long run of just operating right out in the open. Dionisio had been scheduled to testify about the trucking company and his role in it, but when his daughters disappeared, he declined to appear in court.
Mm-hmm. Not surprising. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know what he was there to testify for.
Yeah.
I don't believe he was like a star witness.
Yeah.
And Mr. Lim was convicted eventually anyway. If you recall that the men who arrested Paco were actually Lim's private security team, not police. Which leaves a huge question, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why on earth would a drug lord's men go around doing the cop's job for them?
Yeah.
And why this one random guy in another city on the other side of the country?
Yeah. And this is still a head scratcher. I mean, I know that I did not have time to really or the resources to do a real deep dive into this case. And I think even if I did do a deep dive, I still would figure out because there's stuff going on behind the scenes here that we don't know about. But I just the whole thing is just a head scratcher. But yeah, it's sketchy as hell. One theory about it is that Paco is related and by somehow, not necessarily super closely, but still, even being a third cousin in many countries, you know, puts you in the same clan as somebody else. So the one theory is that Paco is related to a former president of the Philippines who is known to have ties to Lim's organization. This former president still has some political sway, and so perhaps Paco was a pawn in Lim's ploy to stay out of prison. That's just why his men went by to arrest Paco and dangled the theory in front of the police that Paco was the perp.
Yeah.
But apparently his distant relation, the former president, either didn't care or was unable to help. And so too bad for Paco. Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting theory. And that's, and there's a variation on this, too, is that Mr. Lim only intended to hold the Chong girls to put the screws to Dionisio, but then something went wrong.
Yeah, somehow they fought back too hard, that the men that got to do it were incompetent, and that led to their death. That's one thing.
It's entirely possible. You know, I mean, when you're dealing with criminals like that, a lot of them are kind of sociopathic, you know, or at least some of them are, despite whatever Mr. Lim might have said to them. Uh-huh. And so maybe that's what happened. Maybe he didn't intend for them to be harmed, but they were anyway. Uh-huh. Or another way of putting it is that, maybe actually after Dionisio refused to testify, he carried out his end of the deal. He covertly arranged for the girls to be smuggled out of the country to Canada for their own protection. And, and that's what he did. They went through a whole name change and everything. And really for them, the protection of their daughters, for Thelma and Dionisio, that the protection of their daughters took precedence over this massive injustice that was happening. They might have known perfectly well that their daughters were safely out of the country.
Mm-hmm.
But they couldn't say so because that would reveal, what their new names were and where they were living, et cetera. But this is sheer speculation on my part. I'm spitballing.
Yeah. So let's go into theory four, which is kind of what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, it's
staged. The whole thing was staged. And the proof for this, I think the best proof for this is going to be those photos and social media communications that hint at the sisters being alive and living in Canada under those assumed names. It's compelling, but it's not it's not a silver bullet.
Yeah.
The refutation of this, of course, is that they're just the wives of the Chong brothers.
Mm.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I couldn't find out who these women were for sure. And the normally quite loud and out front Thelma has never said that I can find. No, those are just my daughters-in-law.
Yeah.
It would destroy the controversy immediately if she did. But, 3 years on, this conspiracy theory is actually gaining steam in the Philippines. I don't think the family's really said much about it.
The conspiracy theory that the Chongs,
the daughters actually, are alive.
Yeah, the daughters are alive. Yeah. And by the way, I mean, let's not tag it with the label conspiracy theory. I mean, even because that's got a negative connotation.
I guess so, yeah.
It is a conspiracy theory. I mean, definitely.
It is, yeah.
But it's a good one. Yeah.
It's
a credible one. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Another odd fact is that the daughters were not tagged in any of the social media posts. And so if they were, say, daughters-in-law with Facebook accounts or whatever, you'd think they'd be tagged, but maybe not. I don't always tag people. In fact, I usually don't. In social media.
So I guess that's true.
I'm too lazy, man. But so far, no one has tracked them down to any social media accounts or profiles, these women that we're talking about. So, and which is kind of surprising. But at the same time, you know, if they're attracting this much attention, maybe they've deleted their social media accounts too.
It's possible. I know people have used, you know, like facial recognition to try and, you know, track them down and figure out who they are.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think anyone's had any luck. The other thing is I was unable to find any witness testimony or credible writing about that witness testimony beyond Russia, who witnessed the abduction.
Mm-hmm.
So at least for as much as we know, it would mean that they were alone.
Yeah.
The sisters were just like, there'd be no one around. No one saw them. No security camera.
Leaving a very busy mall and.
Mm. Yeah. And the vehicle for these, where this took place, the rape and the murder was alleged to have happened, either has not been found or has been totally left out of any reporting I could dig up. We know that it wasn't Paco's car because he physically could not have gotten a car from Quezon City to Cebu City.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And by the way, you could have rented a car, but there might be a record of that.
There might be a record of that. It also takes about 20 hours to drive and you have to go on ferries.
Well, I mean, he flies over there and then he rents a car when he gets
there.
Oh,
I see.
Yeah,
it could be. But I haven't, it's totally possible. I just haven't seen any evidence of it.
Uh-huh.
The other men, I don't know if they even owned vehicles. They were
reported
to be very poor.
Yeah.
So whose vehicle was this and where did it go?
Mm-hmm.
Tracking the vehicle and understanding the forensic evidence in the vehicle probably would have been the best way to locate Jacqueline's remains.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, near as I can tell, that the car, van or whatever it was, has not been found.
It's interesting,
it's too. It's just totally absent.
You know, and another interesting thing is that none of the six convicted men have offered to identify the location where her body would be found, and which you'd think would be of great interest to the family, et cetera, if not the police. None of them have come forward and offered to do that in return for perhaps a little leniency. Not a single one has done that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nope. And their stories have stayed the same.
Yeah.
They're all consistent, which is not true of Russia, the man who basically was responsible for getting them convicted.
Yeah. Wow.
And then you also have, you know, we talked about Thelma's odd behavior during the trial. She insisted that Paco had been stalking her daughter, and very few people familiar with the case, including those who think he's guilty, will say that that's even physically possible.
Yeah, it's kind of tough to stalk somebody who lives 20 hours away, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How would you do that? Well, you said he was in school 5 days a week. He also worked at a restaurant part-time. He was 900 kilometers away from Cebu City, which if you were in a car, like I said, that would take 20 hours and several ferry rides to drive there.
Yeah.
And they couldn't find any evidence of him having flown there.
Yeah.
So it's a weird thing for her to say. I mean, much less flown there all the time to go and menace this one young woman.
And as far as to the best of my knowledge, nobody ever was able to establish that Paco knew Jacqueline or
Mary Joy, the Chongs, any of them.
Yeah.
I think it's also strange the way that she, you know, really expressed affection, saying she was proud of Russia. She praised him in the press. She bought him gifts.
Thanks for raping my daughter. Hey, what a great guy.
This man participated in the rape and murder of Thelma's daughter.
I know.
Have you ever heard of a victim's parents acting like that? Like, I know people mourn differently. It is a different country and a different culture, but it's just strange.
I don't think people are that different in the Philippines. I mean, seriously.
I don't think so either at all.
Yeah. And this is another thing about it. I don't know Thelma. I know very little about her personally. Maybe she's just dumb as a rock. Didn't realize how bad this looked. You know, I mean,
I don't know about dumb as a rock necessarily. I think she's, from what I can tell, I think she's pretty smart.
Yeah.
But I think she must have, I think especially saying that Paco had been coming up to Cebu City to stalk her daughter,
I
think was, to me, that's like a little tip of the hand. That's, she went a little too far.
Yeah.
With that, because there's just not the evidence there. And it wasn't in the trial, like, for what it's worth. Like, even Judge Ocampo wasn't, you know, or the prosecution wasn't bringing up witnesses to say, oh, no, we have this evidence that he was up in Cebu City and doing this. And none of that really came out because I just don't think it's true.
Well, no, I mean, there should have been all sorts of, like, he had to have, if he was going to stalk her, he had to have flown back and forth quite a few times. There would have been people who would have witnessed him, you know, harassing her at some point. There should have been at least a couple of witnesses to this. I mean, there should have been at least one or two witnesses. If he dated her, he should have met at least a couple of her friends or something. You know, right?
Right. Or like they could find that, you know, he called the Chong residence.
Yeah, phone call records.
You know,
look at phone records.
Yeah. I have not heard any of that. No one's presented that. None of that came out at trial.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
But I think the whole thing this whole thing about getting their daughters out of the country and them still being alive kind of falls apart when you try to think of why they would do this.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted their daughters out of the Philippines. Okay. But there has to be a better, easier way, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, you could just, just legally, openly migrate to Canada. I mean, so I don't know.
Which many of their family have done.
Yeah.
And maybe this was because they were afraid of Lim. Okay, sure. Mm-hmm. But Thelma has only become more visible in the Philippines since the trial. And their sons didn't make any attempt to hide their identity.
Mm.
So, if the fear is of Mr. Lim, who then, by the way, went to jail, near as I know, he's totally, I think he might even be dead, out of power. So why would the daughter still be in hiding?
Unless the threat was from somewhere else entirely. I don't know.
Guess so. But then it would have to be specifically directed at the daughters and not any other member of the Chong family who live a very open, easily, you know, locatable life.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is that my skepticism about, you know, the sort of theories involving some conspiracy to disappear the daughters and they're still living in Canada, I can't figure out the motive. Why do it? And why do it this way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. This is a real head scratcher of a case. And I don't think that if you wanted to go do a deep dive and go to the Philippines and really investigate the crap out of this one, I don't think you'd have a lot of luck. I kind of suspect that the authorities would not be interested in cooperating with you.
No, I did. I tried, man. The Philippines are their own place that I don't necessarily know about.
Mm-hmm.
I really did a lot more than I do for normal episodes to try and research this.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is, I'm, you know, if you know more about this case than I do, if you are a Filipino, and you would like to set me straight on some of the stuff, I'd love to hear from you. We'll have our email at the end of the episode.
You know, we have millions of listeners, and I'm sure several thousand at least are in the Philippines. So, you know, guys, if you know anything, please contact us. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. We'd love to hear about it.
Absolutely.
I actually think that all of my theories are at least partially incorrect.
It's hard to really say. I mean, I'm pretty straight up 100% sure that number one, that the guys were guilty of sin. I think that one is not true.
I'm going to say, yeah, I don't think Paco Larrañaga had anything to do with it. And I think the other men probably didn't either.
Yeah. Which leads me again, I'll say this, if we didn't stress it before, the fact that there's no known links between Paco and the other six guys is also intriguing.
Seem to come from really different walks of life. They weren't part of a gang. There's some evidence that Paco and two of the men had some friends in common, maybe had met at some point, but they weren't. I mean, they live, like I said, you know, they live hundreds of miles apart and they come from different classes.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think.
So that, again, raises the question, not only why Paco, but why the other guys as well. You know?
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is they weren't all part of the same gang or whatever. They didn't really seem to know each other.
Yeah.
So it's kind of an odd thing to be like, okay, one rich kid from 600 miles away, six criminals who don't really know each other are going to get together, get a mystery vehicle, abduct, rape, and murder two women, and then, you know, the kid's going to get back to Quezon City on the airplane on the red eye.
Head back to his culinary institute thing. Yeah.
Right.
No, it's like, here's the thing. It's hard to believe people could be that stupid, especially somebody like Paco, who's got a lot more to lose than the other guys. And if I'm going to commit a heinous crime where I've got to seriously worry about the other people, you know, maybe squealing on me, it's going to be with somebody that I know really well and really trust, not just with some acquaintance who will turn on me in a heartbeat.
It's it's also just a story that you don't hear all that much, right?
Yeah.
Seven virtual strangers go out to abduct women together. Why?
Yeah.
If it was just one guy, if they were just saying, oh, it was just Paco flew up there and did this. Mm-hmm. I think that's, then maybe you can kind of believe that. I think that's why Thelma started talking about Paco having stalked Marjoy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because there needed to be a motive. There wasn't any obvious motive for this murder.
Obvious motive. It's not a crime that makes a lot of sense if you go with the official, you know, the prosecution's version. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't really totally make sense. The problem is I don't actually have a better version of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. That doesn't make that theory right. Like I said, I think we're all wrong. I think something no one has thought of yet is what happened. And maybe one day we'll know the truth.
Maybe. I mean, this story is still alive. Paco was still in prison in Spain and the other guys in the Philippines. So who knows? Maybe we'll get a little movement out of this case.
It would be interesting. So when we can do an update. Well, I think that wraps us up, right?
I think so. I think that, you know, if I have any random thoughts in the case, you know, we'll do a special episode like later in the week or something. But
that sounds good. Yeah.
Yeah. But and same for you. All right. Well, I guess that's it for this week. So, of course, as always, stay tuned to hear all that vital information about our email address and our social media presence and all that good stuff.
Yeah, because we'd love to get in touch with you.
Oh, we totally would love to hear from you
guys.
And
we would also love it if you would write us a review.
A good review.
A good review. Write us a bad review.
A glowing review.
I guess if you really want to, but
please.
The glowing reviews, they really help us to expand the audience to, you know, trick the algorithm into recommending it to more people. Mm-hmm. That's how we keep going and keep doing this.
Absolutely, man. We want to be the number one podcast in the world. We're still a little ways away from that goal, I would say. but we'll make it there, you know, if you guys do your part. Okay.
All right.
So there you go. Okay. Anyway, that's it. I guess that's it for this week. So until next week, everybody, ta-ta.
The Shocking Details can be found at www.theshockingdetails.com. We're on Twitter at Shocking Details. For discussion of episodes and more, our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/shockingdetailspodcast/. Or you can email us at theshockingdetailspodcast@gmail.com. And if you like the podcast, please consider giving us a like and a positive review and letting people know about us.
Actually, you know, one of these days we should rip off the theme from what was that? Remember that old Serling show from the 70s, Night Gallery?
Oh, I love Night Gallery.
Yeah. I love the it was basically Twilight Zone, but
supposed to be Twilight Zone for horror.
Yeah, with a little creepy sort of twist to it. But yeah. I really liked the theme song to it. That was a cool song. That was a cool theme.
Cool song.
Yeah, it was. All right.
So anyway, I guess
we're ready to sign in. I'm going to do the old finger snap here.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.